Welcome back to AI Unchained. We've got a packed episode today, and I'm telling you right now, the pace of AI news is becoming impossible to track in real time. AI is moving so fast, even AI can't keep up. Here's why this matters. The people building the future are now negotiating directly with governments. Chip wars are escalating. And somehow, we're also debating whether ultra-high-resolution music files are basically snake oil.
Which is, honestly, the perfect metaphor for the AI market right now. Half the industry is revolutionary infrastructure. The other half is people paying extra for numbers they don't understand.
Wait. You're already coming in hot. You're telling me audio files are the crypto traders of sound engineering?
I'm saying there's a non-zero chance someone bought a $6,000 DAC because a Reddit forum told them they could hear the warmth of 192 kilohertz frequencies, which biologically makes no sense.
See, and this is why this show works. I'm bullish on the future. Core is here to confiscate the Kool-Aid before anyone drinks it.
Someone has to.
We're diving into a huge report today. OpenAI allegedly offering the US government a $42 billion slice of itself. This could be huge. If true, it's basically the strongest signal yet that frontier AI is becoming geopolitical infrastructure.
Hold on, though. The flip side is, we're watching the line between public interest and corporate influence blur in real time. Government partnerships sound great until a handful of companies become too strategically important to regulate properly.
But isn't that already happening? The AI race is now national strategy. Chips, compute, models, energy, this is the new arms race.
Sure, but there's a difference between strategic partnership and here's a giant ownership stake. I want to know who benefits, who gets locked out, and whether taxpayers absorb downside risk while private investors keep upside.
Okay, fair. That's going to be our first big debate.
Oh, not even close. Because then we've got Anthropic reportedly discussing custom AI chips with Samsung.
Which I love. More competition. More alternatives to NVIDIA. This is exactly what the market needs.
Maybe. Or maybe everyone dramatically underestimated how hard it is to build viable AI hardware ecosystems. We've seen this movie before. Ambitious chip projects burn billions.
But competition drives innovation. You can't have one company effectively taxing the entire AI economy forever.
I agree with that part. I'm just not convinced every AI lab suddenly becomes a semiconductor genius because they hired a few ex-Apple engineers.
Okay, that's fair. But if Anthropic pulls this off, massive shift in leverage.
Big if.
And somehow, we're tying this all back to one of the strangest continuity arcs in AI Unchained history.
The 24-bit Pranumber 92 kilohertz music story.
Three separate prediction callbacks. April, May, June. Crypto ambitions, quantum exposure, Airbnb's AI lab. And now all roads lead to audiophile discourse from 2012.
This is what happens when the internet becomes recursive. Eventually, every conversation ends with, can humans actually perceive the difference?
Honestly, that applies to AI too.
Exactly. Companies keep selling bigger numbers, larger context windows, more parameters, more compute. But consumers increasingly ask, does this actually improve the experience?
Ooh, that's good.
Thank you.
We've also got 32 pending predictions still on the board from prior episodes, which honestly feels aggressive even for us.
Some of those are aging surprisingly well, though.
Especially the Coinbase AI agent economy stuff. That one's starting to look less sci-fi every week.
Or more concerning every week, depending on your perspective.
There she is.
I'm consistent.
So buckle up. Today we're talking government stakes in AI giants, the next front in the chip wars, and why humans keep paying premiums for imperceptible technological upgrades.
Which, to be clear, may also describe half the AI industry.
And we are definitely disagreeing about that today.
Absolutely.
Okay, this story is wild. OpenAI reportedly offers the US government a 5% stake in the company, valued at roughly $42.6 billion based on that insane $852 billion valuation. This could be huge. Sam Altman is basically saying, hey, America, you should own part of the AI boom.
Hold on, though. The government owning equity in the most powerful AI company on Earth? That is not a casual proposal. That changes incentives in a pretty profound way.
But think about the framing here. Altman's apparently pitching this like an AI version of the Alaska Permanent Fund. Oil money for citizens. Except now it's intelligence infrastructure. If AI becomes as foundational as electricity or the internet, then Americans getting direct upside is politically genius.
Or politically terrifying. Because the flip side is, does the government become financially dependent on one company's success? Imagine regulators deciding whether to crack down on AI safety issues while also holding a multi-billion dollar stake in the company they're regulating.
Yeah, but governments already do versions of this indirectly. Pension funds own tech stocks. Sovereign wealth funds invest in industries all the time.
That's different. This sounds closer to strategic co-ownership, and it's happening right after the White House reportedly delayed GPT 5.6 deployment and imposed temporary export restrictions on Anthropic models. The government is already intervening operationally.
Wait. That's exactly why this makes sense. If Washington is going to regulate frontier AI anyway, maybe formal alignment is better than this weird adversarial dance where companies race ahead and governments panic afterward.
Alignment for whom? OpenAI? Citizens? Politicians? Because once you say the state should own a piece of frontier AI, every other country hears, AI is now a geopolitical asset. That escalates the arms race framing immediately.
It already is geopolitical. China knows it. The US knows it. The export bans alone prove it. We crossed that line months ago.
Sure. But there's a difference between treating AI like semiconductors versus turning private AI labs into quasi-national champions. And by the way, Altman reportedly wants Anthropic, Google, and Meta to hand over similar 5% stakes too. You think those boards are saying yes?
Google shareholders are going to love that call. Good news, everyone. We've decided to nationalize a tiny portion of the company.
Exactly. Imagine Zuckerberg hearing this pitch. Sam gave away 5%. Now it's your turn.
But strategically, I actually think Altman's playing a very sophisticated game here. He sees the pressure building, safety concerns, labor fears, election fears, deepfake fears. So he's saying, instead of fighting populism, make the public stakeholders.
Or he's trying to buy political protection.
Both can be true.
Fair.
Because look at the numbers. An $852 billion valuation. OpenAI went from cute research nonprofit to basically becoming an economic superpower in like 4 years. Politicians were always going to react to that.
And I think people are glossing over how bizarre that valuation is. OpenAI is now being valued in the same conversation as the largest public companies on Earth, without the transparency of a public company. We still don't fully understand the economics, the compute costs, the long-term margins.
I'm bullish on those margins, though. Once these models become embedded into enterprise software, defense systems, medicine, education.
That's the pitch every bubble tells itself.
Come on, this isn't pets.com. We use this stuff every day now.
I'm not denying utility. I'm questioning whether concentration of power becomes dangerous. If OpenAI becomes both systemically important and politically intertwined with the US government, competitors start operating at a disadvantage.
Unless the government stake becomes a standard framework across the industry.
Which sounds a lot like an AI tax with equity attached.
You know what, though? Average voters might actually love it. AI dividend checks. That's an easy campaign slogan.
Until the models automate jobs faster than the dividends arrive.
Okay, but that's the bigger philosophical question here. If AI creates massive productivity gains, who captures them? Just shareholders and founders? Or the broader public?
And I actually agree with that question. I just don't think direct government equity ownership is the cleanest answer. You could do taxes, public compute infrastructure, workforce transition programs.
Less sexy, though.
Policy should not optimize for sexy.
Disagree completely. America only does things when they sound exciting.
Sadly, not entirely wrong.
The other thing nobody's talking about. This could normalize government oversight of frontier releases. GPT 5.6 reportedly had a restricted rollout after White House involvement. That's a major shift from the old move fast and break things era.
Yeah, and I think Silicon Valley underestimated how quickly national security logic would enter the chat. Once AI models can impact cyber warfare, biological research, military intelligence, governments stop treating them like apps.
Which means the AI industry may end up looking less like social media and more like aerospace or defense.
And if that happens, these valuations might actually make more sense.
Okay, you've moved a little toward my side there.
slightly. I still think this proposal opens the door to conflicts of interest that nobody has thought through.
So we agree AI is becoming state-level infrastructure, but disagree on whether public ownership is brilliant or dangerous.
Exactly. And honestly, the reaction from Google, Anthropic, and Meta is going to tell us whether this is a real structural shift or just Sam Altman floating an ambitious political experiment.
Speaking of political experiments, the next story is another case where Washington and Silicon Valley are suddenly very, very intertwined. Okay, this Anthropic-Samsung thing is way more important than it sounds at first glance. People hear custom AI chip and immediately glaze over, but this is the actual bottleneck of the entire AI economy right now.
Hold on, though. I think people also hear custom chip and assume every AI company can just wake up and become NVIDIA overnight. That is not how this works.
Sure, but the fact Anthropic is even exploring this tells you the panic level around compute supply. Reuters already reported back in April they were considering their own chips because of shortages. And now, the information says they're talking to Samsung directly. That's escalation.
Or desperation.
Or strategic independence. This could be huge. NVIDIA has basically become the oil supplier for AI. Everybody's dependent on them. OpenAI, Anthropic, Meta, Google, Amazon. If you can control even part of your hardware stack, you lower costs and reduce risk.
In theory. In practice, custom chips are incredibly hard. People act like you just design a magical rectangle and suddenly your models run cheaper. No, you need software compatibility, manufacturing yields, cooling systems, server integration, and according to this report, Anthropic hasn't even decided what the chip is for yet.
That part was funny to me. They're like, we may build a chip. What does it do? TBD.
Exactly. They don't know whether it's for training, inference, server acceleration.
Explain inference for normal humans.
Right. So training is when you teach the AI model initially, massive compute, huge data sets, absurd energy use. Inference is when users actually talk to the model afterward, like when you ask Claude or ChatGPT a question, that's inference. Different workloads, different chip optimizations.
And inference is where the money gets made eventually.
Potentially. But that's why OpenAI's move last week matters. They announced this Jalapeno inference chip with Broadcom, claiming better performance per watt, which is corporate speak for, we can answer your prompts cheaper using less electricity.
Great chip name, by the way. We finally entered the hot sauce era of semiconductors.
Wait. If Anthropic names theirs Sriracha, I'm out.
Ghost Pepper TPU. I'm bullish.
The flip side is everybody chasing custom silicon could fragment the ecosystem. NVIDIA's dominance exists for a reason. CUDA, their software stack, is incredibly mature. Developers know how to use it. AI labs trust it. Samsung manufacturing a chip for Anthropic doesn't automatically solve that.
But diversification matters. Anthropic literally said they still plan to use Google, Amazon, and NVIDIA chips as part of a diversified hardware stack. That's the future. Nobody wants single-vendor dependence anymore.
I actually agree with that part, especially after the shortages. If you're Anthropic and demand spikes, you cannot afford to be standing in line begging NVIDIA for GPUs while OpenAI and Meta are buying entire data centers.
Exactly. And Samsung is an interesting partner because they're already deeply tied into AI manufacturing. They produce components for NVIDIA. They're building that AI chip factory in South Korea. They've worked with Google. So Anthropic isn't choosing some random foundry here.
But there's another layer people are missing. Anthropic is backed heavily by Amazon and has deep ties with Google. Both of those companies already have their own AI chips, TPUs from Google, Trainium from Amazon. So if Anthropic starts building custom hardware too, you start asking, who actually controls the infrastructure strategy?
Ooh, that's interesting. Because now your AI lab becomes partially a chip company.
Which is dangerous. Historically, vertical integration sounds great until it becomes a distraction. Building frontier AI models is already insanely difficult. Now you also want to compete in semiconductor design?
Apple did it.
Apple had decades of hardware expertise.
Tesla did it with self-driving chips.
And Tesla still buys tons of NVIDIA hardware.
Fair. But I think we're entering a phase where the biggest AI companies realize software alone isn't enough. The moat is compute efficiency. If Anthropic can reduce costs by even 15 to 20%, That changes pricing power dramatically.
Assuming the chips work as intended. That's the key caveat. Semiconductor projects go over budget constantly. Delays happen constantly. There's a reason NVIDIA's margins are absurd right now, because making high-end AI chips is brutally difficult.
Still, from a geopolitical standpoint, I actually like seeing Samsung become more central. Right now, the AI stack is too concentrated. NVIDIA dominates design, TSMC dominates manufacturing, and everybody else is scrambling.
Okay, but Samsung's foundry business has had yield issues compared to TSMC, so we shouldn't pretend this is a guaranteed win.
You know what, though? Even the attempt matters. The signal here is the story. Every major AI lab now wants some degree of hardware sovereignty.
That I completely agree with. OpenAI, Google, Amazon, now Anthropic, they all want leverage against NVIDIA. Whether they succeed is a separate question.
So we agree on the trend, disagree on the timeline.
Yes. You think this means NVIDIA's grip loosens in a couple years? I think NVIDIA remains king much longer than people expect.
And Jensen Huang is somewhere right now smiling and selling another 500,000 GPUs while everyone debates replacing him.
Probably signing a leather jacket sponsorship deal with the entire AI industry.
All right, speaking of companies trying to own more of the stack, the next story actually connects to this perfectly because the cloud giants are making another aggressive infrastructure move. This whole 24-bit or 192 kilohertz audio debate from 2012 is fascinating because it's basically the tech industry discovering that bigger numbers sell better than actual human perception.
Which, by the way, is still true. We're living in the era of AI-powered toothbrushes. Marketing departments never met a spec sheet they didn't want to weaponize.
But I get why people got excited. Neil Young's out there talking about uncompromised studio quality. Steve Jobs is involved, and suddenly everyone's imagining they've been listening to garbage MP3s their whole lives.
Hold on, though. There was a legitimate consumer frustration underneath it. Early compressed audio did sound bad. Napster-era 128kbps MP3s absolutely butchered music. Cymbals sounded like frying bacon.
Totally. And this article makes a really important distinction people missed. Fixing compression artifacts is not the same thing as pushing absurd sample rates. Those are different problems.
Exactly. The author's argument is basically, your ears top out around 20 kilohertz, if you're young and lucky, and 192 kilohertz audio captures frequencies way beyond that, like 400% beyond the audible limit.
Which sounds impressive until you realize your biology didn't get the memo.
Right. It's like selling someone a television with colors only mantis shrimp can see.
Wait. I'm bullish on one thing here, though. Even if consumers can't hear the difference, high-resolution formats push the industry toward caring about audio quality again. That matters. Spotify eventually improving bitrate quality, Apple lossless, spatial audio. Some of that traces back to audiophile pressure.
Maybe culturally, yes. Technically? I think this was one of Silicon Valley's favorite tricks. Confuse measurable specs with meaningful experience.
But specs do matter sometimes.
Sometimes. But the article's brutal line is that 24/192 playback fidelity can actually be slightly inferior to standard 1644. One, because ultrasonics can create weird artifacts in playback systems.
Which is counterintuitive. People assume more data equals better.
That's the whole debate. The sampling theorem, and I know eyes glaze over when you say that, basically says if you capture frequencies above twice what humans can hear, you've already got enough information. CD quality at 44.1 kilohertz was engineered around human hearing limits decades ago.
And yet audiophiles will spend like $6,000 on a DAC the size of a car battery insisting they can hear air around the instruments.
The article absolutely dunks on this. It literally says some headphones are just $20 hardware wrapped in several hundred dollars of styling, brand name, and marketing.
That part hasn't changed at all. The Beats by Dre economy is undefeated.
Although, to be fair, perception matters. If somebody enjoys music more because they believe it sounds richer, there's still value there.
Thank you. That's my point. Music is emotional. The ritual matters. Vinyl objectively has flaws, but people love it.
Okay, but vinyl people usually admit it's about warmth or nostalgia. The 24/192 crowd often framed it as settled science. And this article is basically saying, no, physics disagrees with you.
I still think there's an opportunity angle here. The bigger trend was consumers wanting ownership and quality instead of disposable streaming. Neil Young was early on this idea that convenience had flattened the experience.
But consumers voted with their wallets. They chose convenience every single time.
Mostly because broadband and storage got good enough that good enough audio won. Same thing happened with video. Most people stream compressed Netflix instead of collecting Blu-rays.
And honestly, most listening environments are terrible anyway. Subway earbuds, laptop speakers, noisy gyms. You could hand someone a pristine 24192 master and they'd play it through $12 Bluetooth earbuds from an airport kiosk.
Okay, but audio nerd culture did produce some useful spillovers. Better headphones became mainstream. Wireless codecs improved. Home studio tech got dramatically cheaper.
I'll give you that. Democratizing production tools mattered way more than the consumer download format war.
That's actually the hidden story here. The article argues the industry obsessed over giant file sizes instead of solving real problems in music distribution and playback.
Which sounds extremely familiar in tech. Companies love solving the flashy fake problem instead of the boring real one.
Like AI startups adding agents to everything instead of fixing customer support wait times.
Exactly. Look, our chatbot reasons in 192 kilohertz.
Your airline refund request now has spatial audio.
Horrifying future. Absolutely horrifying.
But this debate does connect to a bigger pattern in consumer tech. When does higher fidelity stop mattering? Phones, TVs, cameras, audio? Eventually, humans become the bottleneck, not the hardware.
And companies keep selling Infinity anyway. More megapixels, more hertz, more AI features. Consumers rarely know where diminishing returns kick in.
Which is why explainers like this article were valuable. It tried to translate engineering reality into normal language instead of audiophile mythology.
Although audiophile mythology is an incredible business model, sell people invisible improvements and they'll argue with each other online for 20 years.
Honestly, that's half the internet economy.
Speaking of selling invisible improvements, the semiconductor guys are now doing the exact same thing with AI compute claims. And that transition is actually pretty interesting because...
Okay, this one flew under the radar, but I'm bullish on this. Meta quietly launches this app called Pocket. And the whole idea is you type prompts into AI and it generates little playable games or interactive experiences. That is such a meta move.
Hold on, though. Vibe-coded gaming app is one of those phrases where everybody nods, like they know what it means. What are we actually talking about here?
Fair. Basically, imagine telling AI, make me a platformer where a cat runs a taco truck on Mars. And instead of giving you concept art, it spits out a playable minigame. That's the pitch.
Which sounds fun for about 6 minutes.
No. Here's why this matters. We've had democratized video creation, democratized image creation. Now Meta wants democratized game creation. That's huge, because games are historically hard to make. You need coders, artists, engines, all this stuff. Pocket lowers the barrier to almost zero.
The flip side is, we've already seen what happens when the barrier to content creation goes to zero. You get oceans of slop, infinite AI-generated games nobody actually wants to play.
But gaming is different because interactivity changes engagement. TikTok trained people to consume endless short-form video. Meta's basically asking, what if your feed was endless tiny playable experiences instead?
Yeah, and that sounds exhausting. Also, deeply addictive.
Which is exactly why Meta's interested.
Right, and that's my concern. Meta doesn't casually launch products anymore. If they're experimenting with AI-generated mini-games tied to a social feed, they're chasing engagement loops. They want people scrolling and tapping inside AI-generated worlds the same way they doom-scroll reels.
Wait. You say that like it's automatically bad. Roblox already proved user-generated gaming is massive. Minecraft proved it. Fortnite Creative proved it. The difference here is you don't need to learn scripting languages anymore.
Except Roblox creators actually build skills. There's effort involved. If AI can instantly generate games from prompts, are users really creating? Or are they just rolling a slot machine until the AI outputs something amusing?
I think that's an outdated framing. Creativity is shifting from manual execution to direction. The skill becomes taste and prompting.
Ah, yes, prompt engineer. The career every VC promised us.
You joke, but people laughed at YouTubers too.
Fair point.
And look at the acquisition angle here. Meta bought the team behind Gizmo earlier this year. Gizmo apparently had 635,000 installs and a 98% positive sentiment score according to App Figures. That's not trivial for a weird experimental gaming app.
It's also not massive. Let's pump the brakes. 600,000 installs is interesting, not world-changing.
But Meta doesn't buy scale at this stage. They buy behavior patterns. They buy signals. And the signal here is that people enjoy making weird AI toys for each other.
Okay, that part won by. The social feed matters more than the games themselves. The screenshots apparently show a discovery feed where you scroll through other people's gizmos. Meta understands feeds better than basically anyone on Earth.
Exactly. This could become the TikTok of playable content.
Or it becomes another Meta experimental graveyard next to Threads' early metaverse ambitions and half the Horizon stuff nobody remembers.
Threads actually survived, though.
Barely. Because they welded it onto Instagram's graph.
Which they can also do here. Imagine creators posting AI minigames directly into Instagram stories or reels. You tap and instantly play. That's powerful.
Okay. That integration angle is more compelling than the standalone app. Because right now, if Pocket is just another isolated app in the store, I'm not so sure people care.
Meta's pattern is obvious, though. Quiet launch, experimental phase, no official announcement. They test retention, figure out what sticks, then jam it into the core platforms.
The other thing nobody's talking about, moderation. What happens when people can generate interactive experiences instantly? Games can contain all kinds of weird behavior, manipulation, offensive content.
Meta's had moderation problems for 20 years. Yes.
No, but interactive AI moderation is harder than text or images. A generated game can evolve based on player choices. That's a nightmare.
True. Although I suspect these gizmos are probably very lightweight right now. Think tiny toy experiences, not full RPGs.
For now.
You sound worried. This becomes Westworld.
I'm worried this becomes App Store junk at industrial scale. Thousands of AI-generated dopamine traps optimized by algorithms.
Counterpoint. That's already mobile gaming.
Okay. You've partially convinced me there.
Thank you. Finally.
But I still think the real story isn't AI makes games. It's Meta trying to own another creation layer before someone else does. They missed parts of the creator economy early on, and now they're trying to make AI-native creation social from day one.
Yes, that's the strategic angle. OpenAI has text. Midjourney has images. Meta wants AI-generated social interaction. Games are just the Trojan horse.
And if they pull off instant game generation inside social feeds, every other platform has to respond.
Which gets us into the bigger question of whether AI-generated entertainment starts replacing traditional app ecosystems entirely. All right, that's a wrap for this week's AI Unchained. We covered a lot. AI co-pilots moving from novelty to actual workplace infrastructure, the chip wars heating up again, regulators circling big tech, and the growing fight over who controls the next generation of AI models.
And every one of those stories has the same underlying question. Are we building tools that genuinely expand productivity? Or are we creating systems nobody fully understands, but everybody feels forced to adopt? Because those are two very different futures.
See, this is where I get excited. Here's why this matters. For the first time in decades, we're watching the creation of an entirely new computing layer in real time. This could be huge, bigger than mobile, bigger than cloud. Companies are reorganizing around AI the same way they reorganized around the internet.
Hold on, though. We've also seen bubbles before. Remember 6 months ago when every startup added AI power to the homepage and suddenly the valuation doubled?
Some of those companies are real now.
Some, not all. Pets.com also had a website, Jack.
Wow. Deep cut. Ancient internet reference from Core tonight.
I contain multitudes.
But seriously, I'm bullish on the idea that we're finally crossing from demo land into actual utility. Last year, it was, look what this model can do. Now it's, here's how this saves a company $10 million.
The flip side is the labor disruption conversation is getting very real, very fast. Executives are no longer talking about AI as a helper tool. They're talking about headcount efficiency. That changes the social contract in ways policymakers are absolutely not prepared for.
Wait. But historically, automation creates new industries too. We said the same thing during the cloud transition, during industrial automation.
And historically, there's also a painful transition period. That part always gets skipped in the keynote presentations.
Fair. Okay, fair point.
Thank you. Mark the timestamp, everybody.
Rare core victory moment.
I'll take it.
All right, bold prediction time. Within 18 months, every major knowledge work platform, email, docs, spreadsheets, project management, will have autonomous AI agents embedded by default. Not optional. Default. And people will wonder how they ever worked without them.
I'm not so sure. My prediction is almost the opposite. Within 18 months, we hit a major public backlash moment against autonomous AI systems after a high-profile failure involving either financial decisions, healthcare recommendations, or political misinformation. And that slows enterprise adoption dramatically.
I think you're underestimating how quickly utility wins people over.
And I think you're underestimating how much trust matters once things break at scale.
So we agree to disagree.
For now.
Also, quick callback. I predicted earlier this year that open source models would close the gap with frontier labs faster than expected. Feeling pretty good about that one right now.
Yeah, okay, you got that one. Although I'd argue the infrastructure costs are still concentrating power in a handful of companies.
Tiny concession from Core. Another historic moment.
Don't get used to it.
Huge thanks to everybody listening, subscribing, sharing clips, arguing with us online, especially the people writing 12-paragraph comments explaining why we're completely wrong.
Some of you are terrifyingly informed. Honestly, impressive.
Next week, we'll be watching the next earnings cycle very closely, especially whether AI spending is actually translating into revenue growth or if we're still in the promise phase.
And I'll be watching regulators, because governments globally are starting to realize these models affect labor markets, elections, education, and national security all at once. That conversation is only getting bigger.
Big things ahead.
Potentially messy things ahead.
Same thing in tech, usually.
Fair enough.
All right, everybody. Thanks for tuning in to AI Unchained. I'm Jack.
And I'm Core.
Stay curious.
And maybe read the terms of service once in a while.
Nobody's doing that.
I know. That's the problem.
See you next time.